Ronananian.
A future driverless car using holographic displays for dash controls and buttons and things you turn on.
Beam me aboard.
Energize.
Energize.
The Car Doctor.
And you look at it and you say, isn't that from Star Trek Voyager? You know, you look at the electronics and the technology, and naturally the first thought I've got is, who's going to afford it? Who's going to fix it?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Heyo, Ron and Indian, the Car Doctor here, 855-560-9900. Here to take your calls and answer your questions and talk to you about your automobile. More information, of course, cardoctorshow.com, podcast there. Podcasts in all the usual suspect places around the internet and the world. Tune in, iHeart, iTunes. Just click subscribe if you can, if you've got a player that supports a subscription-based thing. It's free. We're just looking for you. If you click subscribe, it automatically gets delivered to your doorstep and helps us out with our sponsors and helps us to exist as we have these many years. So we appreciate that and all that you do. And if you need me during the week, Ron at cardoctorshow.com. I've been known to reach out via email. Heck, I've been known to pick up the phone. You know, many of people have gone to lunch and they've gotten back and there's that voicemail going, and that was me. So anyway, we are here to talk about your car and its problems and all that that entails. So I look forward to talking to you this hour and many, many hours more to come. Hey, the top 10 most expensive car. No, I don't want to talk about that, actually. I'll talk about that a little bit. I was reading an article about the top 10 most expensive car models to repair. It's interesting what's at the top of the list. Well, I'll tell you what, the top five, the number five most, and I should have read this last hour. I was looking at it during the pause. We just came in from the second hour over the top of the hour break. The number five most expensive car to repair, and this is out of, what magazine is this out of? Ratchet and Wrench. It's a mechanics journal. They're citing the 10 most expensive cars, and let's see, number, here we'll start at the top. The number 10 most expensive car to repair in the country right now is a midsize Chevy Malibu. Average cost to maintain is $1,633. Who is this done by? Wait a minute. Let me read the whole article so I look like I know what I'm doing. I'm sorry. This is by RepairPal. RepairPal conducted a study on the average cost of common auto repairs for the most popular cars in the U.S. using a proprietary database of auto repair pricing. RepairPal calculated the average cost of four common repairs: water pump, alternator, brake pads, and oil change on 40 popular 2010 car models. The survey found Hyundai to have a higher MPG and the most affordable average cost of repairs. The Volkswagen Jetta and Mitsubishi Lancer are both on the most expensive list and cost more to repair than most luxury models and all the SUVs. So that being said, on the scales, Chevrolet Malibu came in at number 10, Infiniti G37 came in at number 9, Mitsubishi Lancer number 8. Really? Mercedes-Benz came in, a Mercedes-Benz C300 came in at number 7, a BMW came in at number 6. The number 5 most expensive car to repair in this survey, Volkswagen Passat. What does that say about Volkswagen? Volkswagen costs more to repair than a BMW and a Mercedes. I wonder if that accounts for the tow truck that they have to get the car back into to drag it into the, right? You know, it's like, I wonder if that covers it, you know? And the cost of having the owner standing on the side of the road waiting in the chair, lounging. Let's see, Volkswagen Jetta was number 4. Lexus IS250 was number 3. And Audi was number 2. That's German engineering. And the most expensive car to repair in this class was a Lincoln MKZ luxury vehicle in the luxury class. But I can't get over Volkswagen. The Jetta and the Passat were in the top 5 of most expensive cars to repair out of that survey. So, like, wow, what are they thinking? That's just kind of mind-boggling. Anyway, let's kick the garage doors open. There was something I was going to talk about, but I'll be darned if I know what it was. So I'll just keep rolling along because I've learned sound on radio is very important. Let me keep talking. Let me go over and talk to Lloyd, who's waiting very patiently there in Louisiana way with a Ford pickup and a misfire problem. Lloyd, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
I've replaced I took the truck to the auto parts. They put the data recorder on it.
Okay.
And it said that number 7 cylinder, the coil was not firing. So I bought another one, put it on, and still the same thing.
Okay.
So I took and put it on number 8 and put 8 on number 7. And now then, the data recorder says that 7 and 8 is not working. What's going on?
Okay. Well.
And let me say this. It's got a slight miss in it, and it wants to bog down. If I put my foot in it and get it on up to a speed of 45 or 50 miles an hour, it does fine. But if I grandpa it, just let it kick into each gear, it wants to bog down.
Okay.
And start kicking in.
First,
like I was riding a mule.
First of all, Lloyd, that scan tool that plugged into the under dash connector. What year was this truck?
Yes, sir.
What year was this truck?
91.
A 91?
91 B10.
With coil
packs? 91 B10 Ford.
With coil packs?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. We'll fix it. We'll fix it as it's still a car.
I'm sorry. I said 91. I was talking to you about 91, listening to you about you've been in the deal since 91. It's a 2001. I'm
2001.
Sorry.
That's okay.
2001.
That's all right. But you know what? Okay, we're good. 2001. So a misfire. What the scan tool is saying, it had a P0307. All right, from my seat here. And a P0307 says there is a misfire on cylinder 7. It's not saying ignition coil. There's two parts to this problem, Lloyd. All right? A P0307 is a misfire. Do you have a small engine? Do you have a lawnmower? You mow the lawn? You use a snow thrower,
right,
et cetera? Okay? If that had a miss, you know, what could it be? It could be the spark plug is fouled. It could be a problem with the carburetor, that's fuel. It could be a problem with the cylinder, that's mechanical. All three of those conditions would cause a misfire. Same thing with the engine in the truck. It's just a bigger lawnmower engine. It's just got 8 cylinders. So when it says, when it says misfire on cylinder 7, it's just saying that there's a miss. It's not saying it's the coil. The general assumption is always that it's the coil because that's people's interpretation.
So it could be the injector then.
Could be the injector. It could be mechanical. It could be the spark plug. It could be a vacuum leak. It could be that a mouse chewed through the wiring harness feeding the trigger going to the coil for number 7.
That's what I was thinking also.
There's a ton of things here. All right? So
let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Am I going to have a big problem on changing valve cover test? Because I saw that number 5, where the spark plug is, that it's sitting in a little bit of oil.
It's a little bit of work, but let's go back over and let's finish with this number 7 and number 8 conversation. So
you
bought a new coil, stuck it in number 7, and had the same result. Now you swap number 7 with number 8, which is the right move. Start moving it around. If you have no test equipment, that's where you're going to go. And now you've got a misfire on 2 cylinders. Okay?
Correct.
Hopefully you're marking these coils before you take them out of the head. Just take a magic marker and swab. Yep, perfect. Then let's take that number 7 coil that's now in number 8. Just to be as certain as we can be, let's take that number 7 coil and move it somewhere else.
All right.
Okay? If that coil shows a dead hole on that cylinder, you know, let's say you move it to number 1, then you've learned the hard way that you know what new stands for. You know what new stands for? Never ever worked. And that new coil is no good. All right? So now you're going to take that coil back to the parts store. Was it a white box part? Was it the house brand, or was it a Motorcraft piece, or what was it? Do you know?
At AutoZone.
Yeah. Okay. Was it their house brand? Was it cheap?
I don't even remember. I've been having this problem for almost a little over 2 months now. Yeah,
you don't remember what you paid for it? $20, $30, $40, $50?
Oh, no, it was $58.
That should have been a decent quality, but doesn't mean necessarily that's always the case. But, you know, new doesn't mean good. So let's verify, first right. of all, is that coil good or bad? All right? If that coil's bad, you got to get another one. All right? But the fact that number 8 cylinder is now in number 7 and that cylinder is dead, if that's the case, then we've got a problem on that cylinder other than the physical coil. Just because the coil's in the hole doesn't mean it's getting triggered properly. Doesn't mean that it's got signal from the computer. Doesn't mean that the injector is firing. Doesn't mean, you know, there's a lot of what-ifs here. So,
correct.
You know, first things first, let's figure out the coil. Once you get past that, then we've got to have a conversation. Do we have a fouled plug? Do we have an injector problem? Do we have signal to the coil? All right? And for that, you're going to need some test equipment. And if you don't have it, then you're going to have to find a shop that does and has the ability to diagnose and pin this down. Does that make sense?
All right. Can I just put a VOM meter, voltohm meter?
Oh, if you've got a
across,
if you've got a digital voltohm meter, yeah, we want to see power on one side. But you're not gonna a DVOM isn't gonna be fast enough to see the trigger point. All right.
Okay.
But what you could do, if you wanted to be daring, and I've done this, is I will take a known good coil, plug it into the connector harness, stick a spark plug up the coil boot, ground the spark plug, use a test spark plug if you want, does it fire? And if it fires, then I know at least I've got spark on that cylinder. I've got to look elsewhere. If it doesn't fire and doesn't trigger, and I've got power on the coil, on the one leg of the coil, then I've got a problem with the
good.
Signal. Perhaps the driver in the PCM is bad. All right, sir. Try those things. I don't want to get too far ahead of you. Try those things. Then call me back next week. Let me know how you're making out. We'll go from there.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Well, you have yourself a good day.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, waiting here for your call. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900 is the phone number. Give us a call. Keep in mind that's toll-free. That's also 24-7. If we're not on the air, we're live Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, as we go out across the affiliates for the weekend. You can call us Saturday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. Even if we're not on in your neighborhood or even if we're not on at that time on your affiliate, you can call Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m., 855-560-9900. And we'll pick up the phone because we're here live in studio, and we're here to talk to you about your car and its problem. Also, if you're looking for this radio show, you don't want to podcast it, you can't get it because you're not on an affiliate. It's streaming from the server right over there on the south wall. Over there, Tom Ray keeps an eye on it all the time to make sure that it's up and streaming and moving its whatever it is, its neutrons and protons and all that other stuff. Gee, I love that kind of talk. Out over the airwaves. So it's there for you at cardoctorshow.com. You'll find the stream. Let's get over to Tyler, Oklahoma City. I guess that's Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, huh? See, I went to school. And see what's going on here. 01 Honda Civic. Hey, Tyler, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, sir.
Okay, I have this. I'm in college, and this is my commuter car across town. In the mornings, I can't get it to start without putting starter fluid in the breather.
Okay. Well, at least you have a valid excuse for why you're late for that 9 o'clock class all the time. You know, listen,
right.
Man, I was out of ether that day, Professor. I could, you know, it's more original than the dog ate my homework. But every time you hit it with ether, it fires right up.
Right, and once it warms up, you know, and even after class, after it's been sitting for a while, it'll start right up. It's like just when the engine's dead cold, it
so it's an 8 hour. We'll call it an 8 hour soak period. If it's
right.
if it's 8 hours of cold, you know, if it's a half a day, it seems to be fine.
Right,
okay.
And I have a scan tool, and I scanned it, and it doesn't have any codes or anything.
All right.
And I've replaced, like, the battery and the fuel filter and the coolant temp sensor, but nothing seems to have worked. So.
Okay. So does your scan tool show data stream, Tyler?
No, it's just a basic
code reader
scan tool.
All right.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Do you have the old coolant temp sensor?
Yes, I do.
Where did you buy the one that's in the car? Where'd you get that one from?
O'Reilly's.
Okay. Nothing against it. It's just that I'm trying to diagnose a problem. And listen, you could buy a new one right from Honda. And,
yeah.
You know, we know what new means. So I prefer that you put the old coolant temp sensor back in it, as painful as that might be. All right, just so we're working from the same page. Where I would go with this is there's a couple of things I want to check, all right? I'd love it if your scan tool had data stream, because I'd like to see coolant temp was a good thought, but I'd like to see what the coolant temperature actually is. Now, the car has an intake air temp sensor, so if it's, I don't know, what's the weather like in Oklahoma City today? What's the temperature out there?
It's like 28 degrees.
Okay, so if the car sits for 8 hours and you turn the key on but don't start it and look at it on a scan tool, the intake air temp sensor will read 28 degrees, and the coolant temp sensor should be within 5 degrees of that. All right?
Okay.
If it's 10, 12, 15, 20 degrees apart, we got a problem. Somebody's lying. Now, if the intake air temp sensor says 8 degrees and it's really 18 or 28 where you are, then it's the intake circuit. But if the coolant temp sensor is the one that's at fault and you've tested or replaced the sensor in this case and it still shows wrong, something is askew. You know, problem in the circuit, problem in a connection, something like that. Once we get past that, then the next thing I'm going to look for on this is, you know, it's all about fuel pressure. How long does it take for fuel pressure to build? You know, what sort of volume does it have? And what sort of warm running pressure does the pump have? When you get in the car cold, and you know, when you put your head down on the steering wheel and pray, oh gosh, I hope my homework was good enough last night so I can get to school and get the heck out, and you listen quietly as you turn the key on, do you hear the fuel pump run?
Yeah, I can hear it prime.
Okay, so it primes. So the next question is, what's that actual pressure? See, the fact the fact that you're giving it ether is fuel, it's looking for fuel. All right?
Right.
The only other thing you could trying to diagnose this on a college kid's budget, is have you cracked the throttle plate? Have you just, you know, touched the throttle plate just a little bit to see if that makes a difference in the way it starts?
That would work for a little while, and it seems if it's warmer outside, I mean, sometimes if I crank it for a minute, it'll start up reluctantly.
Okay.
When it's cold, there's just no chance of it.
All right. Do this. Then the last thing I want you to check, do you have a spark tester of some kind?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you check spark when it's cold?
I have, and it gets spark. All of them, all four have spark.
Okay. But does it have a good, strong spark? Will it jump the gap? I'll tell you what, Tyler, stay put. I want to come back to this when I return. I'm Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. We'll be back to Tyler in Oklahoma City right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron Anning, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900, more at cardoctorshow.com. Tyler, you're still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
We're talking to Tyler out in Oklahoma City. Tyler, you know, where I was thinking this needs to go is when it goes into this no start condition, have you tested it for spark when it goes into no start?
No, I actually haven't.
Okay.
Not when it hasn't started.
So let's replicate the condition. Let's check it for spark when it's in a no start condition. Let's make sure it has spark. And the reason you want to use a spark tester, which was the right thing to do, what do you have, the spark plug with the little alligator clips?
A little light.
Okay, do you have, but is it an adjustable gap so you can set it to 20, 30, 40,000 volts and so on?
No, it's just like the basic one that's got the, you know, the two connectors and the light in the middle.
Oh, so you have a Noid light?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. No, you want a spark tester. You want go down to you said you had an O'Reilly Auto Parts by you?
Yeah.
So get down to O'Reilly Auto Parts. Tell them you want a spark tester. What we're looking for is something that's either going to look like a spark plug with a little alligator clip soldered to the side, all right, or it's going to be about an inch and a half long black piece of plastic with an end that'll plug into the coil connector, and the other end is the alligator clip, and it's in an adjustable gap, and there's a scale on it. You open it up, it's 20, 30, 40,000 volts. Now you can adjust and stress the coil out. What you're looking at, it sounds like what you're looking at is the driver's side. You're seeing that the coil's being triggered. Doesn't mean the coil's firing.
Okay.
All that means is, you know, it's kind of like, you know, somebody tells you to do something. How do they know you did it until they actually saw it was done? So, you know, we want to see this actually happen. All right. So let's do that. Chances are it is, but then we can take spark off the off the table. All right.
Okay.
Once spark comes off the table, the next place I'm going to go is really I want to look at fuel pressure. You know, you hear the pump run. How much pressure does it have, and how long does it take to get there? All right.
Am I going to have to take that to like a mechanic?
Yeah.
There's
no quick easy way for that. And,
okay.
You know, so, you know, I'm sure as a college student, you're on a budget. You're going to have to find somebody.
Yeah.
You're going to have to ask around and find somebody. But it's a reasonable test. It's not, you know, it's maybe an hour shop time by the time they got to unplug everything and connect it all up. But, you know, that's part of the process. This could be a bad fuel pump, not completely uncommon, because we want to know what fuel pressure is. It should be around 40, 42 PSI. And then we want to see how long does it hold fuel pressure. All right.
Okay.
Does it have some kind of residual pressure? It should hold fuel pressure typically 15, 20 minutes. Let me ask you this. Have you tried crank, no start, crank, no start, crank, no start? Does it eventually start? Short bursts.
Well, like I said, I mean, if I do that when it's warmer and, you know, just a couple months ago, it's just gotten worse. When I bought it, you know, it's got over 200,000 miles on it. It's been used. When I first got it, it would take, you know, 4 or 5 revolutions before it would crank over, and then it's just, you know, gotten more and more. But it seemed like, you know, I don't know if it was just the problem getting worse or, you know, when it was warmer in the fall.
Right.
But it would start after I would, you know, I didn't want to burn the starter, so I'd crank, and then stop, let the fuel pump prime, you know, crank, and then eventually it would start.
Right. Because it sounds like it's starving for fuel from my seat.
Yeah,
here.
That's what I was thinking too.
Right. It sounds like it's starving for fuel. And then at that point, what you've got to do is, you know, why is it I've seen voltage problems to the pump. I've seen bad pumps. I've seen fuel pressure regulators cause issues. So this is where the fuel pressure test becomes invaluable.
Could it be some other sensor?
Yeah, could be. The problem is to play woulda, coulda, shoulda, and I can play that game all day long. The problem is without a scan tool to read it, you're never going to find it because, remember, in order for it to set a code, it's got to be outside the spec of what the vehicle manufacturer finds to be bad. But if it's right on the borderline, then, you know, until it actually passes that point in the scale chart, it's not going to flag and set a code.
Okay.
All right, sir. But there are there are no codes in this vehicle?
No codes.
Okay. All right.
It runs great once it's going and it never, you know, bogs down or anything like that. But
you gotta
getting it started in the cold morning is tough.
Gotta look at fuel pressure next. And listen, it may not be fuel pressure. But you know what? One of the things I learned a long time ago is fuel pressure is the most overlooked, and it's just a necessary part of the process. You just got to know what it is. Other than that, you're just guessing. All right,
sir? All right, thank you.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you in your studies, and you give us a call if you need anything else. Fuel pressure is critical. And, you know, even though it's tough on that car to check fuel pressure, it's not the easiest. I'm still floored by mechanics would call me. They've got problems with cars. Schrader test valves right on the top fuel rail. It's literally 3 minutes to plug in and hook up. They haven't checked fuel pressure. No, because they know it's not fuel pressure. You know what? I never know what it not is. You know what? I know what it is when it's fixed, but until I fix it, I don't know what it not is. So I'm going to test everything because that's how you get to know where things are and what they appear to be. Let's pull over and take the pause. 855-560-9900. When we return, we're going to go talk to Maureen in New York City, 03 Pontiac Grand Am. So you guys stay tuned. I'll be back right after this. I'm Ron Anani in the Car Doctor. My turn to talk. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Let's get back to the busy phones and go talk to Maureen in New York City, 03 Pontiac Grand Am. Maureen, welcome to the Car Doctor.
Yes, hi, ma'am. Ron.
Hi, how are you? Good.
Call.
You're welcome. How can I help?
Yeah, how should I put this? I got two opinions on this, actually. The first opinion, the car needs a intake gasket, an intake, and it was quite high, the price. Well over $1,000.
Right.
The second opinion was more like a local mechanic who I've been going to for a long time and I sort of trust. He said, well, yeah, you have that verified it. He verified it. An intake gasket, I think that's what it's called.
Yep.
He said, well, just leave it because it's going to be too difficult to correct. I think those were his words. Hmm. My question is, well, can I leave it? Because, or is there another alternative? Like I was looking on the internet about sealant.
Well, let me ask you this, Maureen. What started this? You need an intake manifold conversation. Were you complaining about something, or did you go in for service?
No,
or?
I wasn't complaining. I just brought it in for a simple diagnostic check. I did feel heat under my feet, but that was after I was running the heater for a while.
So wait a minute. So
I wasn't really complaining about anything.
Okay.
After I parked the car and got out, I smelled gasoline in the back. But I think with cars that age, that's normal.
Well, no car you should have gasoline smell anywhere. So
okay.
So let's back up the truck a minute.
But the exhaust system is safe in that car. I did have it checked.
Okay, but let's have this conversation. It's an 03. The car is 14 years old. Before you spend any real money on this, the place that told you needed the intake gasket first and it was $1,500 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Dealership, do you trust them? Do you know who they are? Do you know what they are?
No, the second one said that it was just to leave it.
Okay, but the one that gave you the higher price, who is they?
The first one who said didn't say to leave it. He said you should get it fixed.
Right.
Eventually.
Right.
Eventually.
He said you should get it fixed. Was that was that the dealer? Was that a mechanic you go
to?
No,
that wasn't the mechanic that I've been going to for years.
Okay.
No.
Who was that? Was that the dealership or was that an independent
it
repair
was,
shop?
It was Sunrise Chevrolet.
Okay.
It was like
and that's,
a dealer.
That's fine. So my point is that these particular engines did go through intake gaskets, all right? It wasn't uncommon. The issue is at what point and where and when does it fail, all right? And, yes, an intake gasket is very important. It's the ham between the two slices of bread, all right? If you don't put ham between the two slices of bread, it's no longer a sandwich. If you don't have a gasket between the intake manifold and the cylinder head, you don't have an engine. And the point becomes that at some point that gasket will fail. Is it worth doing? I'd have to look at this from a mechanical perspective, not because, as your mechanic said, it's too difficult a job. degree of difficulty has no bearing on whether or not something needs to be done. The laws of physics are the laws of physics. If the gasket is deteriorating, and my suspicion is it is, it's probably starting to leak coolant and oil, which would not be uncommon. Then, you know, at some point, the commitment or the decision to replace the vehicle has to be made. My concern is, when you say you smell gasoline at the rear of the car, are you saying gasoline or are you saying you smell exhaust?
I'm smelling exhaust.
Okay. Big difference. All right.
Okay.
Yes. You're going to smell exhaust from the rear of the car.
Right.
All right. So, mm-hmm. So here's the answer. All right. The answer is that, you know, your mechanic or somebody that you trust has to do an evaluation on the vehicle. What kind of overall shape is this 14-year-old car in? How are the brake lines? How are the front suspension rubber bushings? How are and what if and are there any major oil leaks, transmission fluid leaks, things like that? Because you're...
Well, may I say something?
Yeah, absolutely.
There are no other problems with the car. I never had a problem with this car. I was shocked to hear this diagnosis.
Okay, how many miles are on the car?
65,000.
Okay.
A little over.
If it's 65,000 miles and it's got a leaky intake gasket, at some point it will fail, plain and simple, and you've got to decide, do you want to replace it and avoid the problem, or do you want to just drive it and take the gamble? There's no magic pill here.
Well, what would happen if I drive it and take a gamble? Would I get like a fire, an engine fire?
You could. You could also lose all the coolant. You could develop an oil leak. You could do serious engine damage without a fire. You could, I mean, there's a couple of different scenarios. You're basically asking me, you know, if you walk across this tightrope without a safety net in a high wind, what are the chances you're going to make it and what could happen to you on the way down? A lot of things.
So you suggest that I get it repaired.
Right. Provided the rest of the car justifies the repair. It's 14 years old.
That's, well, not quite 14, but you know.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
13, let's not split hairs. All right. But it's close enough that it's just something to think about. All right. Again, it depends upon degree of severity. All right. If your mechanic had come back to you and said, it's not that bad, all right, I could buy that. But for your mechanic to come back to you and say, it's not worth doing because it's too difficult to do, that's kind of a scary statement. So I would ask him to...
He told me just to leave it.
Yeah.
And this is the mechanic that I trusted. So it's,
right.
And but, everything else is working on the car.
Right, I understand that. But you know what? This is like who you want to vote for to become president. Not that this is a good analogy. You can't believe what everybody says and just vote for him on that basis. You got to look at the overall picture. And that's
really
the bottom line.
I'll leave it for a couple of months, and like 2 or 3 months, and then I'll consider repairing it.
Right. But if you want to be safe in that car, especially in the warmer weather, you want to get that repaired. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Anian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this.
This car is automatic. It's systematic. It's hydromatic. Why, it's greased lightning.
Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's get over and talk to Art in Maine, 07 Nissan Armada. Hey, Art, how are you, sir? How can I help?
Hi, Ron. How you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Okay, I have an 07 Armada with 158,000 miles. I've had it for about 3 years. It has always been dealer service until I bought it. Besides fluid changes, what would you recommend to extend the life of the car?
Oh, I think
my financial situation and also my location prohibits me from going to a dealer.
Right. You know, it's all about fluids at this stage in age,
right.
Art. The biggest thing I see, this is a V6 Armada?
No, that's the 5.6 V8.
Okay, this is the V8. This is a timing chain motor, though, correct?
No, I was going to ask you that. I'm not sure.
I think this is a chain motor. I think all the Nissans of this generation are. I'm always suspect of Nissans as they age about chains, guides, and tensioners. Big buck job.
Okay.
And it can break the bank, but it does have to be considered for longevity. The issue is on a Nissan. The reason I'm very cautious is their motors in the last 15 years, if not longer, are interference fit. And if something breaks, you're done.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to look into that. And probably the best way to know whether or not it needs a chain, the simplest way, other than the name badge on the side, is when you start it up and drive it, how loud is it? Does it howl? Does it have a whine to it? Does it sound like a supercharger, like you're behind a New York City commuter bus, for lack of a better way to explain it? If it's got that whine to it, then chances are the chains and the tensioners are a problem.
Yes.
Do you have access to Facebook, Art?
Yes.
Go out to the Car Doctor Facebook page, and it's probably a couple of posts back, but I put up some pictures about an Xterra. I just did a set of chains and tensioners on, and it's just amazing when you look at how the shoe or the guide is worn down the better part of a quarter of an inch. It's just like, wow, because they make it out of cheap nylon.
I was going to ask you, is it nylon? Okay.
Yeah,
I know. I used to have a Suzuki dealership a long time ago, and you know they all had chain-driven camshafts,
right?
And you could tell how they how loose they were by rotating the crank and watching the end of the cams.
Yeah.
Okay. If you got more than a couple of degrees lost motion there, you know that it was bad.
Right. You know, and in this case, it's just you can tell by the howl and the whine. But other than that, I would be aware of the radiator. Nissan's had their radiator issues. These aren't as bad, but some of the Nissans go through trans coolers inside the radiator and creates antifreeze and transmission issues. Other than that, catalytic converters, be aware. But other than that, you should be good to go. I got to go. I'm running Andy the Car Doctor. The mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.